Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting to order of the Safety and Security Committee. First order of business is the approval of the agenda, and I do have a change to the agenda. We had expected and planned that this month would be the normal quarterly report from the Transit Safety Oversight Committee. They are working on, and have been working on, the issue of fatigue, which we've raised here in the committee in the past, and really urged management to develop strong guidelines and enforcement mechanisms to assure that we don't have fatigued employees on the trains or on the roadway. Tox work was not quite complete, and I think in a good sign, management and Tox have agreed there should be a joint report and a joint proposal with a way forward. I think that's excellent news, and we're happy to defer for a month. So would that change is the agenda? Good for everybody?
Yes.
Yeah. And we'll basically have the time. The other thing we were going to talk about today was the lessons learned from the Clarendon incident of a couple of weeks ago, so we'll have plenty of time to do that. Let me turn it over first to Jim Doherty for the safety advice.
Thank you, Chairman Downey. Good morning, members of the board. First off, in the event the building alarm system would go off, we would ask that you exit via one of the three exits and go across the street and meet in the front yard of the building museum and try and take notice of who's around you so that we can account for everybody. Second, our safety contact this month is on Halloween safety. I'd like to note that Halloween is a cherished tradition, but the excitement of the night can cause children to forget to be careful. There is no real trick to making Halloween a real treat for the entire family. The major dangers are not from witches or spirits, but rather from falls and pedestrian car crashes. Follow these tips from the National Safety Council, and we can make Halloween safe for everyone. Motorists, watch for children darting out from between parked cars. Watch for children walking on roadways, medians, and curbs. Enter and exit driveways and alleys very carefully. At twilight and later in the evening, watch for children in dark clothing. Parents, please make sure that an adult or older responsible youth will be supervising the outing for children under age 12. Plan and discuss the route trick-or-treaters intend to follow. Establish a return time. Review all appropriate trick-or-treat safety precautions, including pedestrian and traffic safety rules. Always have children walk on the sidewalks, not in the streets. For costumes, suggest that only flame-retardant materials should be used for the costumes. Should not be so long that they are a tripping hazard. Outfits should be made with light-colored materials or strips of reflective tape should be used if possible. Remember, masks can obstruct a child's vision. Carry flashlights. Carrying flashlights will help children see better and be seen more clearly. Please remember, both children and adults need to think about safety on this annual day of make-believe. Please have a safe Halloween.
Thank you, and I hope everybody will heed that. And let me just ask, are our bus drivers given particular attention to being prepared for Halloween for the kids who will be out there? Yeah.
Fortunately, we get a number of eggs and things thrown, and, you know, so we're out there in support of the operators with supervisors to assist whenever possible. So
great, thank you.
Thank you.
And I will turn it over to CEO, however you want to proceed on the discussion of recent events.
Yes, as we said, we look at an after incident review of the Clarendon incident, and I'd like Deputy Chief Pavlik to go through that with you.
Good morning. My name is Ron Pavlik. I'm presenting on behalf of Chief Taborn. On Tuesday, October 11th, at approximately 4:52 p.m., an eight-car Orange Line train, train number 917, was outbound on the track 2 side from Roslyn en route to Vienna. As the train approached the Clarendon station, the train operator reported striking an adult male subject in the tunnel. The train operator activated the emergency stop button, and train number 917 came to rest just prior to the platform, with the adult male subject pinned underneath the lead car, car number 3019. There are approximately 1,200 customers aboard train 917. Since the incident train did not breach the platform, evacuating the train presented various challenges. Evacuating customers safely around the various pieces of rescue equipment that were staged about the platform presented numerous hazards. Additionally, we did not want to walk customers past the subject who was struck and being treated by first responders. Evacuating customers on the track one side was not an ideal situation either, as the customers had to cross through an interlocking and two sets of third rail. Evacuating customers safely onto the track bed requires numerous first responders' resources to pull away from the incident scene or request additional first responders. If there was an immediate threat to the customers, evacuation plans would have been implemented without hesitation. As you can see from the diagram, the train never reached the platform and remained in the tunnel. The diagram also depicts the location of the lead car as well as the location of the adult male subject who was struck and under the train. The adult male subject was conscious and alert when first responders and Metro Transit police personnel arrived on the scene. The mission at this point of the fire department was to provide life-saving aid and remove the subject as quickly as possible without causing further injuries.
Excuse me. Can I
if you could just pause for one quick second and orient us to the slide.
Certainly.
Did. Thank you.
If you could hear, circle number one is the male subject who was struck. He was approximately midway between the midway to three-quarters of the way back in the lead car. B is where the gate or the platform edge begins. And as you can see, the train never reached the platform. So that's where the hazard was as far as evacuating. We would have had to bring them out one of the opposite cars because the lead car was obstructed by the safety railing that's in the tunnel. So that wasn't really an option, and we didn't want to bring the customers through the platform where all the various emergency apparatus equipment was, and then we didn't want them to possibly be exposed to seeing the individual who was struck and that was being treated by the first responders. The first MTPD officer was on the scene in less than 5 minutes from the time he was dispatched. As the officer was en route, numerous notifications were being made from the Rail Transportation Operation Control Center, as well as the Metro Transit Police Communication Division. Rail transportation personnel began to strategically discuss how trains could be rerouted, advising Bus OCEC that a bus bridge would be needed, and began dispatching additional resources to the incident scene. Here you can see a timeline of significant events as they relate to the incident scene. The Arlington County Fire Department arrived on scene approximately 2 minutes and 30 seconds after they were notified. Once power was confirmed down, Arlington County Fire Department personnel went to work on the adult male subject, rendering first aid and preparing the subject for extraction from underneath the train. As indicated here, timely notifications were made to the Tri-State Oversight Committee and other various entities. As the incident scene was being mitigated, a ripple effect was occurring on the Orange Line, with the Roslyn Station in particular becoming overcrowded. Less than 1 hour into the incident, the escalators at Roslyn shut down by design as a fail-safe measure due to the overcrowding of customers exiting the station. Approximately 1 hour into the incident, it was apparent that the Roslyn Station was too crowded. The Metro Transit Police requested rail transportation to stop servicing the station, and the station was temporarily closed. Shortly thereafter, customers aboard train number 917, the incident train at Clarendon, were safely evacuated to the platform. This was approximately 1 hour and 15 minutes into the incident. Single tracking again, approximately 1 hour and 20 minutes after the total incident began, providing needed relief to the Roslyn station and the overall system. The map here provides a geographic representation of the incident scene. At approximately 5 p.m., train service was being severely modified on the Orange and Blue Line as trains were backing up to Metro Center. 17 Orange Line trains were rerouted to Arlington Cemetery to help relieve congestion in that area. In most critical incidents, the local fire department will serve as the incident commander with the overall responsibility of mitigating the incident scene. The incident commander will establish a command post, which is usually located topside. In order for the incident to be mitigated in a timely and safe manner, it is critical for the Metro Transit Police and key Metro personnel to report to the command post to assist that incident commander with his decision making. As this is unfolding topside, Metro Transit Police and Emergency Management Service personnel boarded the incident train to check on the welfare of our customers, to reassure them, and provide them with timely updates as the incident was unfolding. Furthermore, Metro dispatched 40 buses and Arlington County dispatched 5 buses to shuttle our customers from the Roslyn to the Boston station where they could continue on their route. Close to 3,500 customers utilized the shuttle bus service. As stated previously, the Roslyn station began to experience heavy crowds. During normal rush hour service, Trains are servicing the station approximately every 3 minutes. In a short period of time, the Roslyn station became too crowded, and the station had to be temporarily closed for the safety of our customers. Due to the crowded conditions at the station, the Arlington County Fire Department established a second command post at that station to help mitigate the crowds and deal with any incidents that may occur. Some of the challenges we face: the Metro Transit Police Department and the rail transportation personnel experienced some poor radio communication between the incident scene and the operation command center. There was a brief delay in verifying that third rail power was down, as needed rail transportation resources had to get to the scene. The fire department will not operate on the track bed until power is confirmed down. It is verbally confirmed down through the operation control center, and then a rail transportation supervisor will physically verify on the scene with a hot stick. The hot stick refers to taking a voltage meter type device to validate and ensure the power is down on the scene itself. Once physically confirmed that power is down, fire or police personnel will place the warning strobe activation device, or WASADs, on both ends of the incident scene. This is required. And the WASAD's purpose is, if power is restored for some reason, a warning alarm is sounded, as well as a light.
One question, please. When you said brief delay, what was that period of time?
Approximately 16 minutes.
16 minutes, okay.
There was a slight delay with the Metro Transit Police arriving at the command post as a Roslyn station, as there was a breakdown in communication, as we were unaware that the Arlington County Fire Department had established a second command post. Once we were notified, we were there within 8 minutes. The fire department established a second command post to deal with any incidents that may result due to the overcrowding situation. The area in and around Roslyn is under construction, and on a normal day, rush hour in and around Roslyn is very challenging. Establishing a bus bridge in front of the Roslyn station would prove to be very difficult. Due to the traffic congestion, many of the WMATA buses, as well as the Arlington buses, simply could not traverse through or around the incident scene.
Quick question. Arlington Fire is the incident commander in this case?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Barbara Richardson, AGM Communications Marketing. So I wanted to walk through at the same time that they took a look at the response in the situation, we also took a look at the customer communications. Immediately after the incident occurred, we began to communicate through about five different ways. The first one was the Twitter updates. Those are key, not just for the people who are plugged into the social media, but those updates also go to the media. And that's how we keep in touch really fast, much faster with our partners in the media than just preparing news releases and having the time delay. So that's really critical. And the content of those updates, we of course talked about what happened, but we also took the step of providing actionable information for customers. So we were talking about to our Blue Line customers about the option of LaFont Plaza. We also let them know exactly when we were closed, the stations were closed. So we kept a really steady stream of those. And in fact, there were 44 updates during the entire time of the incident. So the other thing that we rely on is our passenger information displays in the stations, which are critical. And people rely on them quite on a regular basis to know when their train are, so they are accustomed to looking up at those as well. And we were very specific, and maybe in the past we hadn't, but we were pretty specific about what happened, that a person had been struck by a train, I think, which is very instructive for customers. And right at the get-go, we were talking about a two-hour duration on the display boards. We also had our e-alerts that we were using. We have 74,000 subscribers to the e-alert system, and we also were providing warnings there. We talked about the duration of the event through our e-alert systems as well, and that carried on throughout the incident. And in the stations and on the trains, there were announcements made really constantly in the stations and on the trains. So to check, though, what we wanted to do to see about the effectiveness of what we were saying and how we were communicating with people, so our customers, so we did conduct a survey. We invited our customers who are on the Orange Line
and who traveled on that day into the city from Roslyn West. We asked, we invited about 5,000 of them, actually. In total, over 2,600 customers participated. And if you were not in that Smart Trip group, we also had staff at the platforms at the stations last week passing out cards asking people to take the survey. What we learned, some of the key findings were that the in-system announcements were sufficient and they were frequent. We received very high marks on that. We also, and they were very, the folks who were caught on the train that were involved in the incident had an even higher level of information that they knew about responded that they knew of the incident, they knew what was happening, they knew that the police were on site, so they had a lot of key information. Others in the system, however, may not have known that we had a police presence at the situation. But if they did know, amongst the customers that did know, the police were viewed as being very helpful during this time. How did people first hear about the incident, which is really important, because how do we reach them at a time to try to get them to think about another path? And unfortunately, at this time of the day, most of the people had already entered the system. They heard about it from us, from Metro. They were on the train. They were either in the station. So, you know, almost 85% of them had already entered or were entering the system at the time. Or they heard it from fellow passengers who either heard it from us directly or perhaps the social networks that we have or the PID systems and so on. Next slide. So the majority learned about it, as I mentioned, either upon entering or after being inside the system. We asked if they had known, would they have done, you know, if we had provided or if they got an advance notice, would they have taken a different direction? 85% of them said, yes, I would have done something differently. On the shuttles, we wanted to be sure that people knew that they were there, and if the communications on that was coming through. In fact, the communications was coming through, but only 12% actually at the end of it used our shuttles that we had offered. And I think some of the complications Chief Pavlik just mentioned had contributed to that. Next slide. The concern had to do with the crowding at the platform, the issue of personal security, the escalator, the unavailability of the escalator system after it shut down, and the desire for and the impact that a person of what I like to describe as a person of authority. Someone did not necessarily have to have a Metro badge, but someone of authority who they could look to get direction from in the moment. We also heard there were insufficient buses. They did not know where the stops were, where we were going. If you think about it, though, the number of people that we let out for a train and the capacity of a bus, you know, on a train, it's possible we could have 900 people traveling on the train, and that would require us to have approximately 14 buses all at the same time to take care of all those people all at once. So understanding that. And again, the big challenge for us, I think, is that the majority learned about the incident after entering Metro. The takeaway on that for us, I think, is to try harder at promoting the availability of the e-alert system. It is a key tool that people would get alerts if they're in the office on their personal communications device. And we still have some education to do about that because when we asked what was the best way to get information to them when things like this happen, they responded about in-system tools. So I think we have a communications challenge in letting them know about the value of the e-alerts and then getting more of them signed up, which is our takeaway and which we will work on. Because almost 80% of them checked, you know, the best way to reach me is once I get to the station while I'm on the train. So they already, it's a little bit of a shift, and maybe they just are not aware of the availability of the tool. And as you've heard, we're working on making it even more refined to be much more specific about stations, specific stations, as also bus routes, and I think that will be of value too.
Thank you. I think your last statement is the one that I'm most concerned about. I think the e-alerts and all of that's great. I have to say, being in the train and hearing all the announcements, I thought that was great this morning. But the question is, how soon was the station entrance closed and with the incident and all of your alerts? Because I think the communication going out is, again, yes, when I sit down on the train, I probably pull out my BlackBerry or whatever. But if I'm not, it's a while before I get your alert. Mm-hmm. But if I'm walking into the station, what's the first time that there's a procedure in which we say, it's closed, don't enter, we can't put you on the platform?
Yeah. Right. The Clarendon station closed immediately within 3 minutes of the incident once the fire department apparatus were on the scene. The fire commander at that time made a decision to close that station because it is a side platform station. So it was almost immediately after the incident was founded.
And I guess just to walk through, is that the procedures that we generally follow in terms of that incident and the walkthrough of given a particular type of incident, let's say this one, that command takes over and those steps?
Right. The incident commander ultimately makes that decision, and it honestly depends on the station layout, if it's a side platform station or if it's a center platform station in relation to the body, if it's going to be a rescue operation where the person is showing signs of life or if it's going to be recovery where the person is obviously deceased. So each situation is different, and it really depends on the station layout and ultimately is a decision of that incident commander.
And would those times and that communications also be changed? For example, Ms. Richardson indicated that customers were notified this is probably going to be a two-hour delay. In an incident in which there's a recovery, it could be probably different, or is it different between?
Right, it could be longer. If the person is deceased at the scene, most agencies will allow us to single track around the incident, depending again on the recovery. And then once we recover the body or prior to recovering the body, we might suspend train service temporarily. But usually, in most cases, we will single track around it.
Yeah, thank you for the report. I want to focus on the escalator unavailability. And it appears to me, from what you said earlier, Deputy Chief, you closed the Roslyn station because of the overcrowding of the escalators. At least that was the prime reason, it seemed to me. You couldn't get people in and out. Is that true? And if, and let me just, that's part of the question. The real question is, you know, I go to ball games. I'm at Union Station. And those escalators during certain times of the day are always overcrowded. You know, you got queues lining up to get on them. They're not as long as Roslyn, but certainly they queue up, and they're certainly full and packed. And I guess my question is, they automatically shut down, at least that's what I'm hearing. And so, you know, why wouldn't the other ones close down during the ballpark games and others? And then related to that, do we have some system in place where we have like a tiger team of escalator responders? You know, in other words, everybody's responding, but how about just an escalator tiger team to go to those locations and at least to get people out to have some override capability, or at least there to make sure that we can keep those escalators running? So that's the crux of my question. How do we develop a system, and maybe we have it in place, to keep those escalators running and maybe even in an override position to get them out, get people out?
Okay, as it relates to the escalators at Roslyn, as everybody's aware, that's, you know, a very, very deep station. And what caused it to trip was basically just off of sheer weight. The escalator itself, it had a fault induced that it could not control itself, so it shut down by design. On that, we have staff that is throughout the system, and we do try to, you know, remotely respond to various areas, you know, throughout this incident. But our staff is going to be dependent upon the system and getting through 100%. The other component of this is trying to clear four banks of escalators with that many individuals at that one point in time creates crowding. The other thing that's also important to note is at Roslyn, it's not just the orange line, but it's the blue line. They're cycling trains every 2.5 to 3 minutes. And so that's why it was also noted where we started diverting trains all the way around to the Arlington Cemetery. One of the things that we are looking at, as we've noted beforehand, as an after this and what we've been working on, is also in our control center to be able to remotely monitor these escalators. Some escalators have the ability to be monitored because they have the technology, and some of them do not. And that's one of the things as we look at this, as we monitor our power, our radio communications. This is the next step that we'll be looking at, to have people inside the control center understanding that station and its status of its equipment to be able to communicate to work forward. But, you know, we work very closely with the police and everything else, and it's a decision with that staff that's in the field. And if you've got all these people that are trying to get out, it takes several minutes, as you know, just to clear, and you don't want to be keeping people, you know, trapped down. And so that's why instantaneously they just start diverting trains out throughout the station to get people away from the general area.
It raises a question about, I understand the emergency responder command structure. I don't understand who the accountable metro official is on the ground that is responsible and accountable for managing the customer issues. It obviously can't be just the station manager. Is there a process for a senior enough manager that an incident like this, to have an on-the-ground person who is accountable for the management of the customer issues?
Yes, I mean, naturally, you know, the station manager is always looked at because they're the ones that are at the station naturally. But whenever we have one of these incidents, we do begin shifting staff. We have senior supervisors that are out there. We have also superintendents. We also work very closely with the transit police. And so our focus is, you know, they're taking direction from the control center and advising, and they're providing information, and they're trying to juggle several things. But once the police and our senior management gets together, it's the intent of those individuals to pair up to be able to monitor the station, to make decisions, and then also whenever we have a third party that controls the scene, our tendency is to let the police department or emergency management communicate and coordinate with that, and then we take our respective, you know, direction from them as well.
The reason I asked the question is after a couple of high-profile rail station accidents, the authority set up a kind of quick response team to be dispatched as quickly as possible, oftentimes by a police vehicle to a station. It was a first responder management issue. I guess that was abandoned for some reason, but it was a response to exactly this set of issues about having an accountable mid-level or upper-level manager on the scene to manage the customer issues around this. The second issue I wanted to mention about Barbara's note about e-alerts. Unfortunately, the system is not, for all cell users, it's not completely accessible yet. There are chunks of the system where you cannot get any service. So when you're in the station, so it does, you can't yet depend on that technology, and it will be, I don't know how long, until the entire system is.
That is true, but I want to get them before they arrive. So that is the, I understand the limitations, but it is a tool that we should try to maximize, I think.
The point is, once
announcements and the announcements on the trains. So people that are in the system get those. It's trying to get people before they get in the system. That's the purpose of the alerts, really.
Yeah. Can I have one last question? Is there a current ops plan for every major rail station about incidents like this in the system that is current, that is worked through with the jurisdiction first responders? I think about the nervousness that this creates about, for instance, closing the south entrance to DuPont Circle and having an incident like this under those circumstances. Having current plans for emergencies like this by major station?
Basically, is what it is the fire department in each of the local jurisdictions, as well as the local fire departments, each under the National Incident Management System, NIMS system. So everyone is trained in first responder in that regard as far as incident command and how it's established. Each incident is different and they're very fluid, but every discipline within this region is under the basic NIMS concept and is adapted to that policy.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would be pleased to wait until he's finished with his presentation to ask my questions.
Sure. Finally, several days after the incident, key personnel from Metro met with the Arlington County Fire Chief to review the incident. During this meeting, we discussed different ways on how we might be able to single track and still keep first responders safe in the future. In the near future, during non-revenue hours, we will stage a scenario similar to this incident and simulate how we might be able to walk a train through an incident scene. Basically, the way that we envision this working is a rail transportation supervisor will stop the train prior to entering the station, and once cleared by the incident commander for approval, will walk the train into the station and back out of the station.
What do you mean by walking the train?
When I say walk the train, basically the rail transportation supervisor will meet that train at the tunnel entrance. The station, the supervisor will stay on the platform, and then that train operator will follow that station or supervisor down the station platform.
The train will actually be moving.
Yes, the train will actually be moving. And the reason for this is a lot of times the fire department can't hear. That's one of the other complaints that they often complain about. So this way it would go in at a reduced or slow speed and then walk it right through the incident scene. Obviously, we would invite all the local fire departments. It wouldn't be just germane to Arlington County. We would invite Fairfax, the District of Columbia, Montgomery County, and Prince George's County as well. We also need to do a better job as a police department making immediate notification to the local police department and Department of Transportation for traffic control assistance or devices or personnel to help move our buses and vehicle traffic around the incident scene. And finally, we recently implemented a conference line for senior-level management to discuss in real time the incident scene as it is unfolding.
Thank you. I do want to commend the police department and management for getting together with the Arlington folks pretty immediately after the incident. So thank you very much for taking that step. I would say from my jurisdiction's point of view that the vast majority of the mail that I got focused on Roslyn. The Clarendon situation, because the station was closed, because it was pretty clear what was going on there, I did not get a lot of concern. But there were many, many Arlingtonians who were very, very frightened by what went on in Roslyn. And in a subsidiary manner, there were issues at Ballston that I don't think have actually risen to the top yet that I just heard about last night about egress from that station onto the street level that's impeded by the way some things have been built out. And so that's an issue I really think we need to look at. Can people, if you've got a whole bunch of people dispersing fast, can they actually move away from the escalator and allow the next set of people up in an efficient manner? And we got some issues at Ballston. But I really want to focus on what happened at Roslyn and make several observations and some suggestions. For Arlington, the fastest way to alert our emergency response system is to call our emergency communications center. And I suspect that that's probably true in most jurisdictions. That was a call that didn't happen.
And that would have put the police, the fire, and traffic control people all on alert. And so I think that needs to be part of the conversation going forward, is when does that call get made, as opposed to the call directly to the fire department. The issue of bus bridges and how they interact on the system, when you bridge from Ballston to Roslyn, you're bridging all within one jurisdiction, and you're bridging people into a station that's already got a whole bunch of complications. That's a transfer station. And so I really have some questions about why we didn't bridge south to Arlington Cemetery for the people who were trying to go that way, and why we didn't bridge into the city to GW for the people who were trying to go that way, and not try to bridge into Roslyn where we were trying to exit all these people. It added a complication, and there's probably logistical reasons, but my focus is, what is the safest thing for our many, many customers who are caught through no action of their own in the situation, as opposed to what might be the absolute most convenient thing for us to do, which is run people back and forth to the same places. So really, I think we really do need to look at that. I think all stations are not created equal. That's another lesson here. You can't have something happen in Clarendon and let the trains run to Courthouse in Virginia Square because they can't turn them around. So there are chunks that come out of the system, and I think we need plans that look at that issue and figure that out. And I appreciate that the fire department has the incident command and that they train, but that is not the same as running scenarios if we got to take a chunk of the system out. And it may be that working with, like, Northern Virginia Transportation Commission or whatever the comparable thing in Maryland is around these kinds of plans is the right thing to do. But we need to know that we have a game plan that will work for the thousands of people during rush hour to get them in and out of whichever stations we're in safely. Finally, on the issue, Barbara, I really appreciate the fact that you surveyed. I think that really is important, and I did hear again from Arlingtonians who got to do the survey and were appreciative of it. It seems to me that the PIDs before I go through the turnstile are the key, and I don't know how quickly those got changed. At my station, which is Clarendon, there's two PIDs before I ever get to the turnstile that typically tell me, you know, what's coming up. How fast do I need to move for the train? And those seem to me to be critical to change early if, in fact, we don't have enough people on either. And then the final thing that I would say is that in my jurisdiction, we have an alert system that has 10,000 Arlingtonians who are subscribed, and it's heavily used. We also have a partner one that's a school system one that gets to parents. It may be that we could work with our locals to push out, if you want to sign up for Metro Alert, here's a quick link in how you do it. Especially given this incident, I think you'll get a lot of people who'll subscribe. So, thank you, Mr. Downey.
Mr.
Chair.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask Barbara about the who were the Metro personnel on site? Like from all the things that we saw on TV, it just seems like masses of people. And I'm just trying to figure out who that person was of authority on site. Okay.
Yeah, as far as at the incident scene itself, we had four supervisors. One was a mid-level manager, as well as three subordinates. We had seven officers, and then at the Boston station, we had one sergeant and
these
two officers.
Public safety people.
Yes, these are all police personnel.
Okay.
And then at the Roslyn station, we had a sergeant and five officers as well. So we deployed multiple officials to the scene, both mid-level managers and first-line supervisors to the incident scene, as well as a large contingent of officers, in concert with the Arlington County Police Department.
Was the Metro chief there?
No, not at the incident scene.
Okay. The other question I had, just in terms of press availability, because there obviously were a lot of cameras there, I would have liked to see a Metro official on site answering press questions and providing that information. Did that happen?
In this instance, when it happened, rather than trying to get somebody there, it was more effective for Dan Stessel to get the information out as soon as he could from the operations center from where he was. So it is difficult to get somebody actually there, and by the time they get there, the bigger priority is to make sure that we have the most accurate information and that we get it out as fast as we can.
Well, I think there are multiple priorities from my point of view, and clearly getting the information out that way on Twitter and all of that is going to get to a segment of the population. The other segment of the population, like me, was watching it on TV in horror. Like, what is really happening? Why are those people seem so confused? I see people going out in ambulances. What is really going on? And I would have liked to see that person of authority from an information point of view speaking directly to people who may have been waiting for a loved one to come home, trying to figure out where someone is, and getting that information out. You know, clearly we have, I think that we should find a way to do both, to have that Twitter information, and let's all remember, everybody's not on Twitter or e-alert and that. So that's just one point I'd like to make. And secondly, I think that when we have incidents at this level, I'd expect to see, if this was in my jurisdiction, my fire chief there or my police chief there or whomever is at the top. I mean, I don't know how you rate this incident among the incidents that Metro deals with. But, you know, that's the type of attention that I think it deserves.
Every station in the system is different. Every station has different configurations and different challenges. To use two examples, one is, for instance, Metro and the closing of the south entrance to DuPont Circle. The other is Bethesda, with currently a challenge about escalator operations. Each of those has some specific vulnerabilities, and there are stations that are more vulnerable because of passenger loads and rush hour. Unfortunately, suicides are going to be part of this business forever, it seems. It simply comes with the rail passenger business. So we can't plan on this not happening again on a regular basis. It seems to be prudent to have operational reviews about incidents like this by station with individual station plans.
Mr. Chairman?
I want to address a couple things. First, with regard to DuPont Circle, and the closing of those escalators, we've gone through and developed a very detailed plan to actively manage the crowds at that station as construction is underway, so that we have people on site at all times to respond to any incidents that occur. Obviously, we can't do that at every station or even the major stations on this network. What we do is we respond to the incidents. On this particular one, in addition to the police officers that were on the scene, and it's multiple scenes really what we're talking about here. It's not only the incident scene where we're trying to save somebody, but it's also Roslyn and mentioned Boston. I forget how many people you had out there. Was it 40 or 50 people? 40 or 50 people on the scenes, multiple scenes trying to deal with this situation. With regard to executive officials, the way I want to see this operate is the executive officials are not on scene, given the time, direction. I expect the managers and somewhat senior to them to be there to go through the incident. That's what they've been trained for. I want the executives in better contact, and that's one of the things that's mentioned in the things to follow up on. We had started setting up an executive conference line, not for the purpose of directing the moment-to-moment operations there, but to see the bigger picture and to try to make decisions that we can then relay to the people in the field. I think it's much more effective to have the chief spokesperson in a position where he is communicating with operations and knowing what's going on and can get that information out as readily as possible. I do not believe that in this incident, while grueling for our passengers in terms of delays and everything else, and I've been through these many times in my life as a customer, not only as a person responsible for the system, actually went fairly quickly in a time frame. It was about 2 hours time frame here, from when the incident happened to when we were back in operation. That requires a lot of action by a number of people to get us there, and I want those people to stay focused. I frankly disagree in terms of sending the chief of police to the scene or myself to the scene in this type of situation. There may be situations where it definitely warrants it, but we're trying to react as quickly as possible. We'll give directions. There are things we learn from this. We can do better. Certainly, some of those things are outlined here, but my feeling is the executives should be operating either on a conference line or if we're in physical proximity in our emergency operations center to deal with these situations.
Just to follow up, and I never suggested who should be the chief spokesman, but if you have a chief spokesman, it would seem to me that the chief spokesman should be speaking. I don't know how you have a chief spokesman and say that their responsibility is not to update the public.
That's exactly what was happening.
Okay.
That's what Dan Stessel, the chief spokesperson, was updating the public through multiple media, and he's operating from here. And remember that this incident happened at the peak of the rush hour. Our train service is stopped into this area. We got people flowing out all over the place, as we described before. To divert police resources to get a chief spokesperson out there, which would probably take us, I don't know, a half hour at least, maybe more in a peak period, we then lost that ability to communicate with the public. I feel very strongly on that.
How many people are on that team?
How many people do we have in the press office? We have the chief spokesperson, and I think we have two other people.
I want to follow up on Mr. Down's question earlier, and particularly appreciate his mentioning the Bethesda Metro. I had the opportunity to meet with the County Council Committee this past week about issues with the escalators in the Tacoma Metro, and there were a number of members of the public at that meeting very concerned about this issue. And one question that came to us, and actually came to us from an individual who was a retired firefighter, asked what the plan was for evacuating the Bethesda Station, which has only one entrance at this point, in the case of an emergency, and did those evacuation plans take into account the fact that the escalators could very well, one or more escalators could very well be broken if an emergency happened. I didn't have an answer, and I don't believe there were anyone else there with an answer to that question. And I think Mr. Downs is exactly right. We should have evacuation plans for the stations, and particularly where we know that there's issues like that, we ought to have something thought about ahead of time before something happens, particularly because if an incident like that should happen in Bethesda, it could very well be that the crush of people could make all three very long elevators inoperative at the same time. And I'm not asking for a plan right now, but I'm just suggesting that is the kind of thing that we should be doing.
Thanks, Mort. I didn't even know there were e-alerts. Can I sign up for an e-alert today? And how do you do that, and what does it include, and how does the press publicize this, and how do you tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to get an e-alert?
Well, that would be great. We'll sign you up.
Thanks, Barbara.
And the alerts come directly from the operations center. So they will tell you, you can sign up by line. So in your instance, you'd want to be with me on the red line. And it'll tell you when we have delays,
when we have, you know, issues that we have that will affect your commute.
Just tell us, so the press can hear, what a customer needs to do to get an e-alert this morning.
Yeah, you just need to go to the website, right?
Go to our website and sign up.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Second question, more if I could.
And it says e-alerts. That's great, Dave.
Oh, e-alerts. Second question I have.
And you can also follow us on Twitter.
I don't do Twitter. Second question I had was, there was a story in the paper this morning about the lack of regional response when it comes to 3 inches of snow, earthquake, et cetera. How does all what we're talking about today get into this bigger regional response dilemma that we have faced my entire adult life living in the Washington metropolitan area? I mean, how does this all fit together or not? Yeah, the COG thing was in the paper this morning, and it was kind of sad to hear that after 7 months of discussing regional response that we're going to take some interim step until we can get through the next snowstorm.
Well, the regional group is the COG, and that's what we rely on. And when there's a major snowstorm, earthquake, whatnot, we all end up on the conference call and discuss what we're doing. We have our plans for handling snow. We feed that in to the COG conversation in terms of what we're doing and intend to do. Earthquakes, I will say, I don't think we had a plan for that. But still, we fed into COG what we're doing and let people know. There are some imperfections in it in terms of when the biggest imperfection is when the major employers, and there's certainly one major employer, decides to release their employees or they determine to self-evacuate. To the extent we try to anticipate that. It requires a lot of shifting by both the rail and the bus operations people to accommodate that and get resources in place. So, like I said, we have our snow plan. We reviewed it last year before the winter. I guess it's about time to review it again. Dave has put it together already. We will do that, and we will have it ready. But it's really, at this point, it's communication, what each agency is doing and trying to inform the others. Yep, and as Dave pointed out, we're already staging the equipment and materials for this winter.
Okay, three more questions. Mr. Nichols, Mr. Downs, Ms. Hines.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the report as well. The first observation is really adding my concern to that expressed by Mr. Downs, Ms. Porter, and others in terms of a specific incident management plan for each of our stations, or at least those that have similar characteristics, and frankly, they're all different, and not only because of how we would handle specific incidents, but also because each of the fire and emergency teams in each of the other jurisdictions also has different protocols for managing those incidents as well. And I'm not asking for a specific plan or response right now or what our approach is to that, but it is something that I would like to know more about and understand our global approach toward incident management, small scale, big scale, and our procedure and protocols for what we do given certain situations. And again, that's a major concern that I have.
We do train with the various departments, and the chief can talk about that, in terms of evacuating from tunnels, evacuating from stations. Certainly in DuPont, we've been through that with the fire department with regard to the escalators. There's, as the chief mentioned before, there are specific protocols set up, so there's a chain of command with regard to the other agencies and ourselves, but we can give you a full briefing on that if you'd like.
Okay, thank you. And I have one additional question. This one's more of a specific. The third rail, and we discussed that it was about a 16-minute period of time where we were looking to validate that, and I guess the question I have around that, when an incident like that occurs, what triggers the power down to the third rail, and is it, and what is the incident response process for that? Is it an electronic shutdown, and what are the verification processes? And is 16 minutes what you would expect? Was that too long? Was that quick given the circumstances? What would the optimal time frame have been for you to know that that was shut down so that other things could have taken place that, to ameliorate the situation?
Okay. First of all, we go solely off of, you know, what the operator and or station manager might see. So instantaneously, once we have a call or a series of communications between the operator and or station manager confirm we have an individual that is potentially trapped, the control center has the ability to remotely take down power, okay, from the control center. It would happen at our control center. Okay, now that is a remote effort, and basically that's an electronic signal and pulse. But by the process, as we've discussed previously, before we really want people to get down into the rail bed and start working and stuff, we physically want somebody to go down from our power or who's properly trained to make sure that the voltage and stuff is down, then they start establishing their safety equipment. We do have a small groups of like response teams that are in the morning, a.m. and p.m. You know, we don't have the resources to put somebody at every station, so we try to put at key locations and stuff. You know, 16 minutes from our perspective to have somebody respond is pretty good, knowing that that area from Roslyn all the way to really to Ballston and stuff, it's a parking lot basically at that time of day. It's very difficult if you have people that are actually, you know, have to drive. Some areas of the region, you know, responds a little bit faster, some does not, but we do have a protocol on how we go through where control centers activated, the maintenance operation control center, our communications with the police, everybody, and our maintenance departments and transportation mobilized. And this is all happening in layers at the same time.
So just one clarification on that. So someone had to physically go to that station from another place to validate the power shut down.
Yes, we actually have physical locations, and we're actually dispatching, you know, staff as well at that.
So, but there's no one at that particular station who can make that validation there. That has to be someone come from a different place.
If somebody's coming up that's trained to be able to handle the equipment and stuff.
Somebody
who, like I said, knows power.
Thank you.
Ms. Hines and Mr. Downs.
Thanks. I was reminded by my staff who's here that a number of years ago, Metro and the Arlington First Responders and the Pentagon worked through plans around all of our stations. So it may be because we have a lot of new people that folks aren't aware, but we do have a basis, and they did work through them. Whether or not they got activated this time, that's a question, but we do have them. So hopefully that's a good place for us to start. But Mr. Downey, I think this conversation's been really good, but the question really is what changes and how do we move forward? And so I would like to suggest that it would be useful to me to have something that sort of walks through the protocol that I can make sure the people who do emergency stuff in my jurisdiction could look at it and say, yep, this will work really well, or here's some tweaks that would make it be even more efficient, and that, you know, that happen across the region, and perhaps we can have a report in, you know, 6 months or something about how we fine-tune what is a really critical set of processes to handle evacuations, to handle these kinds of incidents across the region.
I think that's very useful, and when we wrap up this session, maybe we can make a little more specific in terms of what we'll be doing. So I'll hold for that. Tom?
This is not on the incident, but it is about a recent incident, and it doesn't need a lot of discussion this morning. When I had the hearing on the bus route changes, several individuals in Anacostia raised the issue about bus security. This is before the recent shooting. There was a strong concern voiced that there was no real visible police presence in the bus system. After the fatal shooting on the bus, some street talk was that if this had been a fatal shooting on a Metro rail car, the system would have gone into overdrive about bus security. I'm suggesting, not for this meeting, but at a future meeting, that the board discuss publicly commitments and changes about the visibility of security on the bus system. It is a perception in parts of the community that it is not of equal emphasis, and I think the board could stand to at least review the issues around bus security. So I would recommend to the board and to the chair of the security committee that we have a review of those issues.
I guess the schedule would say 2 months from now would be the chief's quarter for review. Perhaps we'll put that on the agenda. What I'm hearing is a pretty good response. Certainly what we heard from Ms. Richardson was customers on the whole were understanding. Obviously they'd like to hear more. Don't enter the system is probably a good message, the best way we can get it out. I'm thinking of, I called my son the other night. They had a four-hour problem on the Long Island Railroad. I said, were you caught in it? He said, nope. I heard it wasn't running, and I went to a bar. But always opportunity to do more. And I think particularly, as the chief mentioned, there need to be reviews with the agencies that are out there, looking at the plans, those that are in place, those that aren't in place. We can always be assured that when an incident occurs, it'll be just at the worst time and in the worst place. Count on it. So think about where those places are and what are the plans we have in place. On Mr. Nichols' comment, I would note there is a National Incident Management System, NIMS, that is subscribed to by this agency and by each of the jurisdictions. And they do speak the same language. They do have the ability to communicate. Those systems are in place, but they don't come all the way down to the specifics of individual incidents. But it's a good start. It really is in terms of coordination and response. But I think when you feel comfortable that you've finished that review and have something to bring to us, whether it's 3 months from now or 6 months from now, we will keep that on the agenda, because I think the public really does want to know that we're doing so. I have one other just quick question about this incident. The trains that were sent through to Arlington Cemetery, I think was a reasonable response, get them out of there. What happened there? What response did we have for customers who wound up in Arlington?
Okay. I can speak from the operational perspective. Whenever we started offloading individuals at Arlington Cemetery, we monitored the crowding and stuff, there. We didn't get a lot of negative feedback. There was a lot of confusion. I think a lot of people felt good, at least that they were at a place, a separate location. The other thing I'd also like to just point out is that we also have to be concerned about what's happening in the district and on the other side of the railroad, because while everything was at Roslyn was stopped, we have this whole core and region that we have to figure out how to turn everything back around so that way we don't have backups in every location. And one of the things, in having an opportunity to talk with the fire department in Arlington, we did a talk with them to say, next time, because we'll have more of these in the future, and it's also, we can saturate their resources very quickly. They're managing one area, so what's the best way to handle it? So we also looked at maybe the ability to go to a Pentagon City or Crystal City, offload a train set, so that way there's other bus services, there's other areas, like Mr. Downey said, there's other establishments that you can wait these things out, and then you can proceed forward. And like I said, when we look at reversing, we look at basically making sure that we take care of the rest of the railroad at that location, because we do saturate a lot of resources whenever this does occur.
Great. Thank you. I neglected at the opening of the meeting to ask for approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Any questions on the minutes? If not, we'll consider the minutes approved and the meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have one comment. I was waiting for the opportunity to say something good. And this is regarding security. I was surprised by the response to my previous comments around security issues at the metro stations in Prince George's, but I wanted to report that since that time, we've had a lot of collaboration. That's very positive on both sides. I want to commend management, but also the Prince George's Police Department. And also note, I think we've all heard in the news about the arrests relating to Suitland. So I also want to thank the media for the level of coverage and the arrest that we typically get in an incident, because that too serves as a deterrent. So I'm very encouraged by the progress that we're seeing. Thank you.
That's it, Mr. Downs. Your meeting.